You are listening to The Secrets of Once Upon a Time on SQPN.com, the StarQuest production network, leading the way. This episode is brought to you by Bluehost. Create your own website or blog with a .com domain name for just $6.95 per month. Go to SQPN.com and click on the Bluehost banner for more information. And by the Amazon store. Shop at Amazon by clicking on our Amazon link at onceuponatime.sqpn.com, and your purchase will help support our show. And by you. Become a sponsor of our show by signing up for a monthly donation and become a friend of SQPN and support all our podcasts over at the StarQuest Production Network. Go to sqpn.com for more information. And welcome to another episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, where we discuss the ins and outs, the secrets, the inspiration, and all the Easter eggs hidden in the episodes of the ABC series Once Upon a Time. And today I've got two co-hosts to go over the episode The Heart is a Lonely Hunter with me. First of all, let me welcome Deborah Shaben. Hi, Deborah. Welcome back to the show.
Hello. I missed being not on it last time. I was, you know, it was
you had important things to do that day.
Oh, I don't even remember, but yeah.
Anyway, we're glad to have you back on the show. Also joining us is Shelley Kelly, and this time I've got the order right.
Correct.
Welcome to the show as well. Your sister couldn't join us today. She is celebrating, I guess, New Year's Eve with the family.
Yes, they're out of town. My father has a couple hundred acres, and they're out there enjoying nature.
Oh, very good. Well, that's an excellent excuse. And David Handlos emailed me that he wasn't sure that he could make it, but if I see him on Skype, I'll add him to the conversation. So today we're going to talk about not the season finale, it's kind of the winter finale of the first part, the first half of the season, or not even the first half. We're actually at one third of the first season. It's quite exciting to know that we still have so many shows, about 14 shows to look forward to. But this was the final episode before the end of 2011. And it definitely ended with a cliffhanger, not really a cliffhanger, but a big reveal in the final scenes and a very dramatic ending. And I think that we have ample material to talk about for the next, 50 minutes here on the show. So why don't we go ahead and try to recap what happened in the episode. But now let me play the promo of episode 7 of Once Upon a Time first, so we get into the mood and we get to hear a little bit of the audio of that episode. Let's see if I can get it to play. I need a special spell for this kind of stuff. I'm refreshing my YouTube window and it's just ignoring me. It's like, I'm not here. I'm not going to play this. Let's see, Once Upon a Time preview.
Housewives is all new next.
There we go.
Do you believe in other lives?
All new next Sunday. A vengeful curse trapped them in our world.
They don't remember who they are.
For the first time, one of them will try to break it.
I think we know each other. Not from Storybook.
From where then?
But exposing the truth will cost one of them their life.
Your revenge is almost complete.
The number one new drama of the season, ABC's Once Upon a Time. All new next Sunday at 8, 7 Central.
Shelley, you prepared a short recap of this episode, so refresh our memory, please.
Okay, well, Father, the episode opens with Graham in a bar. He's been drinking and he throws darts, very accurate darts, at a picture of a deer. But the more important part is he doesn't feel anything. And he goes outside with Emma and he kisses her. And when he kisses Emma, it causes him to remember vividly a wolf. And Emma, of course, rejects him, and he turns and goes off to Regina. And when he kisses Regina, that's when she starts to remember. And she remembers comforting her stepdaughter, Snow White. So we know Snow White is the stepdaughter, and the father has just died. And in a conversation with the mirror, we hear that Regina has been responsible for his death as well, and she plans to kill Snow. Now, Graham remembers more and more throughout the episode in different pieces. He's out searching for a wolf in the woods, and he comes across Mr. Gold. And Mr. Gold tells him something very important. He says, they say that dreams are memories, memories of another life. In the episode, we also learn how the huntsman came to the queen's attention and that he agreed to kill Snow and bring back her heart in exchange for a ban on the hunting of wolves. Now, Graham is remembering different things, and he goes and confronts Mary Margaret, and she asks if he's been talking to Henry. So she tells him that Henry thinks they're all storybook characters. And then that's when we see the flashback of Graham walking with Snow in the woods, and she very cleverly figures out that he was chosen to kill her, and she runs away from him. And by the time he catches her, he's hunting her, and she's writing a note. And she writes this note and says, give this to my stepmother, and then she prepares herself to be killed. It's going to be a good death. But Graham reads the note, and we don't know at that time what it says, but it changes his mind. And he fashions her a little reed whistle that will bring her help if she plays it, and then he tells her to run away. Back in the real world, he finally visits Henry. Henry goes, oh, well, of course, you've got to be the huntsman. You're supposed to kill Snow White. He says, well, what happened to him? He goes, well, the evil queen ripped your heart out. It's kind of her thing, which I thought was a great line.
Yeah.
Emma catches up with Graham. He's searching now for his heart. He thinks it's in a vault, and the wolf is his guide. And so they actually do see the wolf. The wolf guides them to this vault in the cemetery. They break in. Regina finds them there. Then she accuses Emma of coming after everything that Regina holds dear. She punches Emma. Emma punches her back. It's a great scene. Emma leaves. Graham leaves. They go back to the police station. He's, you know, putting an ice pack on her bruised face. And this is where things start to really get good. In the fairy tale world, the evil queen reads Snow's letter. And that's very interesting because Snow forgives her. And so the queen is enraged. She figures out the heart isn't human, of course, and she rips out the huntsman's heart, which we knew was coming.
Mm-hmm.
She calls him her caged pet, and she orders him to the bedchamber. And then in real life, Regina enters the mausoleum. And if you had any doubts whatsoever whether Regina knew what was going on between real world, fairy tale world, it's gone. She pushes back the slab. She descends into this room that has all the little vaults of hearts. And she pulls out the huntsman's heart. She holds it up. Back in the police station, Emma finally opens up, has a soft moment for Graham. She kisses him, and he wakes up. He remembers every single thing. He gasps. He says, I remember. And too late, Regina squeezes that heart and crushes it. Graham collapses and dies in Emma's arms. Ta-da.
Right.
And you're all left staring at the screen going, oh, my God!
What did I just see? This was an amazing episode with so many big reveals and some confirmation of things that we've speculated about in the past, but also some twists and turns that I absolutely didn't see coming. Deborah, what were your first initial impressions of the episode?
It definitely got my attention this time, and I guess, you know, this will probably go into my wild speculations thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hate to say that right now, but I'll say it anyway. I don't think Graham is dead.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, they say, oh, he dies. But if you look at the IMBD for Once Upon a Time, the character appears in several more episodes following this one.
But it could just be him in the fairy tale world, of
course. That's true. It could be. So it's going to be interesting to see.
Maybe
he gets a heart transplant.
Ah, why not? It would be a very common thing in the world of television and movies to have that moment where you think someone is dead, and then the next episode is like, you know, the first scene is he's waking up and he has had like emergency, whatever,
yeah,
resuscitation. But he could be dead. He could be dead for good. You never know.
That's right.
It's very interesting, but it's good to know at least that we'll see his character, one of his characters, back in the rest of the season, or at least in a few future episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So Let's go over a few of the plot points just to clarify some things or make sure that we got our bearings in this episode. I have a few questions that things I didn't really understand, and then after that we'll dive into the more thematic analysis, and I think that's going to be the beef of our discussion because there are some very, very interesting themes in this episode. But let's see, this episode showed us that the people of Storybrook are starting to remember both Emma, but also the Huntsman. They get flashes, and so there is definitely some, could you say, healing taking place. And all this, of course, was initiated by Emma's arrival in the town, and the clock started ticking again. And so there is progression, and for healing to happen, there needs to be a progression. There needs to be a future, basically. So that was interesting. Of course, the biggest reveal was that Regina knows about the fairy tale world and is probably fully aware of her devious past. And not only that, but she also has magical powers, or the magic still works in Storybrooke because of the final scenes that we see where she crushes the heart and it kills the Huntsman. And so I thought that was pretty amazing. We've got the appearance of the wolf, the same wolf who actually stepped in front of the car of, was it Emma's car?
Yes.
Yeah.
And was this when she was this in the first episode, in the pilot episode? I forgot
when she
that
tries
happened.
To leave. Yeah.
Oh, that's it. That's it. And so it's the wolf that probably wants her to stay. So the wolf in this episode too has the role of almost a guide or a protector or something like that. It's he brought Emma back to the town because her story wasn't finished yet. She has a role to play, and in this episode, the wolf is the character or the animal that guides the huntsman to his heart. And he's
not a pet. He's definitely a friend or some kind of a spiritual family member guide.
Yes.
Because the huntsman, they reveal, was raised by wolves.
That was
the wolves are
too.
His family.
Yes. So is that part of the original fairy tale? I didn't look that up, but
No, not that I'm aware of.
But I thought it was a very interesting twist again to the character that he was raised by wolves.
Kind of go back to the Jungle Book.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, it has definitely it feels like that, like the story of Mowgli. But it clarifies why the huntsman says, "What's his Storybrooke name again?"
I'm Graham.
Graham, sorry. It explains what he says when he goes looking for. Gosh, I'm so bad with names. James. Who ran away after awakening from his coma, and they're in the woods, and he's like, "Well, this is. Don't worry, I know my way here. This is kind of my place," and it makes sense because that's where he was raised in the forest by wolves. Now, one thing that I didn't understand was the whole deal with the colored eye of the wolf. Is that something I missed? Was that explained, or is it something that we will hear perhaps in the future?
I think you're going to hear that in the future. I don't remember seeing anything about that.
Okay.
It was not explained, but I have noticed they use an extraordinary amount of color in each episode. It's very vibrant. And this episode especially opened dark, gray, black, but the red really stood out. And I started to notice every time that they used red when the rest of the background was very dark or black. Particularly, he was wearing a blue jacket or something, but there was always that red-looking scarf or something around his neck, kind of like a noose. There was red on the darts, the red of the apples. I don't know if they're doing it on purpose.
The red of the blood on Snow's outfit at one point, where she's hurt, and there's this patch of blood, or was it on her face? I was like,
Regina. Wow. Regina was on her face after Emma.
With Regina, yes, but also with Snow when she is hunted by the huntsman at one point. Mm-hmm. There's blood, and I was like, "Wow, that really stands out." It's as if they purposely amplified that red color and muted down the other colors. And of course, you've got the heart at the end, in the final scene where she takes it out of that little vault, and it's like this very vibrant red purple color. I think they absolutely must have done that on purpose. And of course, this is all about heart, about love, about blood, everything that we associate with the color red. And so it's interesting to see that thematically they even enhance the episode to emphasize that. For me, what was a very interesting moment was the encounter with Rumpelstiltskin.
Oh, yes.
In the forest.
And he's only in that one scene.
Yes. And he is, well, gardening.
In the forest, which I'm like, yeah, no, you're not
like,
gardening.
Yeah, you're right.
With a pretty big shovel and those blue hospital gloves.
My immediate idea or thought was he has been burying someone or digging up someone.
I don't think he's burying. In fact, that's part of the feedback we got.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Well, we'll get to that.
No, but you know, you're saying he's burying. I think this is how he finds his stuff for his shop is, you know, because how does he get these puppets and all this other stuff for his shop? Because
he might be digging for the fairy tale world.
Exactly, because it's all there below them, right?
Oh, well, that's an interesting idea.
Speculation there.
No, but you could be right. Yeah.
Did you notice that the tree was hollow? He's digging around a tree, but it looked like that tree had a hollow, dead part in the middle.
Well, I thought it looked like, or perhaps it was another tree, but there was this trunk, and it was struck by lightning, and it was burnt. You saw like some of the edges of the thing in the background were burnt, so there had been a fire or a. It looked as if it was struck by lightning and then torn down, or perhaps it just the lightning itself destroyed the tree. So I was like, could this be the tree, the portal tree, that they used to bring Emma back to the real world? I don't know. Anyway, I just want to make sure that I didn't miss anything in the episode.
And did you know he was alarmingly clean for gardening?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He even shaved.
There wasn't a speck of dirt on him. Mm-hmm. So
indeed,
it was highly suspect.
Another question that I had about the story, and especially about the flashbacks, is what is exactly the time frame of this flashback, this particular scene where we see Snow and the Evil Queen mourning about Henry. When exactly does this take place? We know that it must have taken place after the Evil Queen murders Henry.
No. I think you're confusing Henry. Henry is the Queen's father. Henry is not.
Oh wait,
Snow's father. This is the earliest flashback we have seen to date. So this was. I mean, and they did a wonderful job making the actress look younger and act younger through her mannerisms. I felt.
So
this is how she. Into the woods.
So we don't know exactly who was killed. Except that it was the Evil Queen's husband, right?
We know it was Snow White's father
or
and
Snow
the
White's
Queen's
father.
Husband.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we'll find out in a future episode.
Who could that be?
But I'll hold that on until later.
So. Okay, so this is the earliest story that we see from Fairy Tale World. That I was a little bit confused. When is this taking place? And that palace, I'd never seen that palace before either. You know, the big, it almost looked like a strange science fiction-like tulip or something like that. It looked spectacular.
It did.
I've never seen a palace like that. And then the whole, you know, central court where it wasn't really a tomb or anything, but it was with all the petals and everything. Was that
and the use
place
of color again, there's all the red, and Snow
red.
Lays down a perfectly white rose.
But it was a very circular space, and I was wondering, and again, it's because I just watched the episode once, and I was getting confused. I was like, could this be the same place where in the pilot episode we see the wedding between Snow White and Prince Charming? Because that, too, was a circular place, and the wedding itself took place in the heart, in the center of the circle. I was like, could that be the same place? Is that the same castle? I don't remember.
It could have been. I didn't go back and check I did not go deep into looking, comparing.
Yeah, we should
where
take
the
a look
round
at
table was where they met and where James's. I hate to say father, but that king, the King George, his space, and then where the wedding took place. But it very well could have been.
Well, let's take a look at the patterns in the floor and see if it's the same place. But I hope that someone on the web, and perhaps this has already been done, but someone should draw a map of all these places and give us a timetable. Like, this takes place then, and this takes place there. Because the story is getting pretty complicated already, and it's only getting worse, of course, over time. So,
I did notice the floor had a star, a burst, like a starburst or a compass rose.
Mm-hmm.
And that pattern has been seen in several different places.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, now that we're talking about the palace and the evil queen, I thought it was a brilliant move to explain why the evil queen was wearing black. Because it's kind of a token thing in all the Disney movies, like the evil queen is always in black. And here they just explain it. They give it some background. It's like initially she was mourning, or at least pretending to be mourning. And then she decided that, well, black kind of...
suits me.
Yeah.
Very goes with her heart.
Whereas Snow White, of course, after seeing her in black here, I at first I didn't even recognize her. It's like, who is this girl? Oh, wait a minute, it's Snow White. She switched back to white in Storybrooke, but not really in the, well, the only white she wears in the fairy tale world is during her wedding when she has the wedding dress.
And Emma's always wearing that red jacket.
Yeah.
Emma really stands out.
Emma has the red too, but was she wearing it this episode? I don't think so.
Yeah, yes. She was.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Especially when they went to the mausoleum in the cemetery.
Oh, cool. All right. I should pay more attention. Or I should probably watch the episode more than once because I'm missing all these details. What I loved was the way the episode started, where you hear the forest sounds and you see the deer, and then all of a sudden it's struck by this ginormous how do you call those, the darts?
Yes.
And it turns out it's just a picture in the middle of a dartboard. Like, who has a dartboard like that? I've never seen one like that.
I don't know, but Lisa noticed something. As she told me this while we were up there at Christmas, Graham, when he is Graham in the real world, he's got a very strong accent. But when he is the huntsman in the fairy tale world, the accent is gone.
No way. Really?
I think he has the accent in real life, and he's trying very hard to make it sound more American. But there's definitely a difference in the pattern.
That is cool. So Storybrooke has turned him into... What kind of accent is that? Is that Scottish? I guess it is.
I think so.
Yeah. Cool.
Did you know, Deborah?
No, I didn't notice, but his accent sounded very, actually, not even Scottish to me. I guess more, I thought it was more English or even South African, but what do I know? I'm American. I don't know these things.
I'm looking up the IMDb information about the actor, and Jamie Dornan, who plays the huntsman, is actually from Northern Ireland. So he was born in Belfast. So that might be what we're picking up there.
Yeah,
but he's not American, absolutely not. And was it me or was Henry looking older or different? I was like, did they film this episode the kid looked older. I don't know.
Well, it's so hard at that age, you know, because they're changing so rapidly at age 10.
Could be.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like Harry Potter. It's like...
Yeah. they're playing 14 years old while the actors are 24. Yeah, that's been always the case with all these series, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Like, everybody in that high school is like twice the age that they're supposed to have. Or I've started to watch Smallville, and it's the same thing. That whole school is like Glee, you know?
Yeah. In their 20s, yeah.
Oh, well. We're so used to it now that we hardly even perceive it anymore. let's move on to our thematic analysis of this episode. And I had a little thing that I wanted to play. Oh, wait, I might want to turn up the volume. Sorry about that. Here we go.
these stories, the classics. It's a reason we all know them. They're a way for us to deal with our world. If it doesn't always make sense, believing in even the possibility of a happy ending is a very powerful thing.
So, Shelley, what were the themes that you thought were most important in this episode?
Oh, gosh, there were quite a few. The first one that really stuck out to me, at first I wrote down feelings, but it kind of evolved into more than that. It was heartless. She keeps looking. Regina's looking for someone who's heartless, who doesn't have compassion. And what I wrote down, I had to go back and look it up, heartless. The archaic meaning of heartless is spiritless. Now, today it means lacking feeling or cruel, but the mirror tells her you need someone adept of murder, bereft of mercy, without a heart, or maybe she said that to the mirror. Mm-hmm. And that is a theme that just runs throughout this whole episode. Graham is struggling to feel something. He doesn't feel, and he was such a feeling character before. I mean, you saw him, they kind of set him up as a very Native American type of hunter. He kills the deer, but then he does that little prayer over the animal, thanking it for giving up its life so that he might live.
I was thinking the Indian way of dealing with nature, you know, Native Americans, like saying a prayer over the animals that they kill.
That's very spiritual. So saying heartless is spiritless, I thought was a real tie. And then he's honorable. So honor and sacrifice was the other major theme.
Yes.
And then on a smaller level, trapped. And then just a tiny touch of morality, because they just showed Mary Margaret with that thing with Dr. Whale, just that one little clip with her conversation with Emma. But again, about Emma's feelings, putting up walls, keeping out pain, but it keeps out love. So it's all about whether we're capable of feeling, why we feel, do we have a heart, do we not have a heart? I don't know. It was swirling in my head the whole episode.
Yes, yes. And interesting dialogue there between Snow and Emma, because we know that Emma has a heart, and we also see her as this tough lady who does not easily show what's really going on inside of her. And at first, she seems to be very distant from everyone, and especially distant from Henry. And bit by bit, she's starting to open up, and of course the Snow White's really touches upon the biggest problem that she has, and that is, you know, just let go of all those defensive barriers that you've constructed. And I was wondering, you know, what has happened in her life? What are the main issues that caused her to build this wall? I can think of a few of them. I mean, we've got, of course, the fact that she's an orphan. And she has no parents, at least not as far as we know in the real world. And
well,
then
sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, well, remember when she was a child? You know, she went to foster parents who gave her up back to the foster when they had their own children. Decided they didn't want her anymore, and they gave her back.
True.
So that could her to not want to be close to anyone.
And then, of course, you've got the trauma of her giving up her own child, thereby almost repeating what her parents had done, and then probably the regret after that. Or perhaps she gave up Henry because she was unable to love, because she had already built up that wall, and she just didn't feel like she was worthy or capable to take care of a child, you know, not having been loved herself. And so go ahead.
I think that made the ending so powerful too, because you kind of saw her starting to crumble it around the edges just a little, just to allow herself to feel something.
Yes.
In that kiss with Graham, and then he dies.
Oh, it was right terrible.
In her arms.
And Graham himself, now knowing what we know now, which is that the Queen took his heart. That also explains his erratic behavior, and because I think that many people that were watching the episode were two episodes ago, where we discovered that he had a relationship with Regina. They were shocked. It was like, oh, he seems to be such an honorable man. How could he? You know. And Emma, when she discovers it in the previous episode, and she's still mad about it at the start of this episode, she's like, how could you? But it almost seems, well, of course, there's the part where he is under the spell of the evil queen and he's literally her prisoner. But there's also Pat. Perhaps this, yeah, Pat, it's even worse than a prisoner. But there is also this quest for, he tries to feel. And so him kissing Emma, which was quite scandalous, like, where did that come from? I think in retrospect, it's probably an attempt for him to feel something. And of course, you know, a kiss is what everybody says should be accompanied by feelings. It still doesn't work. But it starts to break down the wall. So the kiss, and of course, that's a huge fairy tale theme. The kiss being something that can break spells, evil spells, something that can bring life back. Think of Snow White. Think of
Sleeping Beauty.
Sleeping Beauty. The kiss in this case starts almost a psychological awakening of Graham and starts a healing process in at least in his mind. So he starts to remember and starts to feel again, and so his heart starts to beat again. And it's at that moment that Regina crushes that heart, and because she doesn't want love, she doesn't want that heart to beat ever again. Because she's still heartbroken herself, I guess.
But it kind of, all the people there in Storybrooke are almost like hollow shells.
Yeah.
They don't lack spirit. He's empty. Graham, you got the feeling he struggled once he realized he's empty. He has no spirit, no soul. He lacks compassion. He's unable to feel, to empathize. He feels it, but he doesn't. I don't know why I don't feel anything. I need mm-hmm. to find my heart.
Well, and he knows that he is meant to feel, because that's another very interesting theme in this episode. It's like this quest that he has to regain his heart. He wants to find it because he knows that he's not made for, you know, this empty life. There is, he has a calling. He probably, you know, somehow feels or intuitively knows that at one point in his life he did feel and he was able to love and he was able to care, and now it's taken from him. And I think that touches upon a very fundamental spiritual idea in a lot of religions, and it's very predominant in Christian religion, is this sense of humanity has lost actually something very important. And that happened a long time ago, in a very, very in a very distant past. And the first story in the Bible kind of tries to relate that by telling the story of Adam and Eve that lost basically the love of their life, and that was God, by turning away from Him. And ever since, humanity has been on this quest to find that love again and to heal that broken heart. And it's ultimately the person of Christ, Messiah, person that was predicted for a long time, who, by giving his own heart, by sacrificing his own life, and literally his heart is pierced on the cross after he dies, by giving his heart, he is actually restoring humanity in that, you know, loving relationship with God. And I think that a lot of that theme, a lot of that very deep, and this is encrusted in our entire culture, at least in the Western world, because we're so imbibed, I think, with all these Christian notions. It's been an ongoing theme in a lot of our fairy tales and a lot of our stories, this quest for love. And we all know that we're meant for something bigger than this current life that is broken in so many ways and that is filled with so much suffering and so much longing. And there's only ultimately one thing that can fill that gap or that emptiness in our hearts, and that is, you know, this bigger love, this divine love. And it's usually only attained by losing ourselves, by giving up our hearts or sacrificing our hearts. Which brings me to the another interesting theme in this episode, and that was Snow White's sacrifice. What do you think of that?
Oh, I thought that was really good.
It was a bit mysterious because we don't really hear everything what had happened in the past, but we get some glimpses.
Well, yes, and you know, when he comes across her and she's writing the letter, and she says, "I understand that you will never have love in your life because of me." So right there, that gave us a little bit more of what had happened. We'd kind of figured that part out.
Mm-hmm.
But for the sake of the kingdom, I hope my death satisfies your need for revenge. Allowing you to rule my father's subjects as they deserve with compassion and a gentle hand. I know what you think you're doing is vengeance. I prefer to think of it as sacrifice for the good of all. With that in mind, I welcome the end. I want you to take my last message to heart. I'm sorry and I forgive you. So she's willing to die for the subjects that owe allegiance to her father, the king, and who will be ruled by the queen in Snow's absence. And that was really good.
And that was very, very profound.
And she meets it honorably, selflessly.
Yes.
She's and in doing so, it negates the revenge. It takes away all the satisfaction of her death to the queen. It nullifies that somehow.
And that's probably why she's so enraged. And she crumbles the paper and throws it in the fire. She doesn't want to hear of reconciliation. She doesn't want to hear of sacrifice and forgiveness.
Well, and I think that's why the huntsman couldn't kill her. He read the letter and realized that, because we saw the scene in the tavern where he says, you know, what kind of a man cries over an animal? And he says, an honorable one.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "What animals have honor?" And he says, "Well, they're pure of heart, not selfish and self-serving like people."
Right.
So then he meets this person who is selfless, and she's willing to die if it will improve the lives of those other people that are under her care.
Yeah. And it's I think again here you see a very strong Christian undercurrent in the way that this story is told. Because in the sacrifice of Christ, you've got these same themes. There are many ways, of course, in which you can try to explain what happened with the death of Christ. And in theology, you see a lot of different angles to this central mystery that you can't really totally grasp. And the same is true for the New Testament. You see a lot of different approaches, I think, to what happens on the cross, but a lot of these themes center around this idea that actually humanity, by betraying God, had deserved punishment, and God is seen as, at least in some Old Testament stories, as someone who is righteous, who is just, and thereby also punishes evil behavior. And so sometimes plagues and defeats and occupation by foreign enemies is often seen as a way in which God tries to punish his people, not because he's an evil God, but because he wants to correct them and wants to put them back, you know, in the right direction. But in a way, there is no real punishment that can undo what has been done by humanity by turning away from God, because that's a free act of will, and God cannot really force us to love him. It has to be a free choice. It has to be something that humanity decides to do, and that is, I think, why the sacrifice of Christ makes so much sense in that context, because he is the Son of God. He becomes one of us. And by sacrificing, he does exactly what is needed to mend that rupture, that broken relationship. It's by giving himself back to his father on the cross. And on the cross, he does exactly what Snow White does in her letter before she is about to die. He forgives his enemies. He forgives humanity for, you know, killing him, for killing the Son of God. And at the same time, he turns to his father and says, you know, in your hands I commend my spirit. So he willingly, and a lot of the gospel writers emphasize the fact that this was not just fate. This was not just bad luck for Jesus, but it's something that was actually planned. And he wanted to do this, and it was a free choice, despite the fact that it looks as if he was the victim of all this violence around him. He deliberately wanted to give his life to bring us back to his father. And so I was watching this episode. I was like, wow, they clearly have taken a lot of those elements, a lot of that inspiration to, you know, and used it in the way that they told this part of the story of Snow White. Yeah. Which I don't think is present in the original fairy tale. At least I've only, of course, seen the Disney fairy tale, but I don't remember Snow White being like, okay, let's die.
We'll have time
to reread that one.
Well, and you got to remember also, and this is in the original fairy tale of Snow White, you know, how the Wicked Queen dies in the original Snow White is that she goes to the wedding of Snow and the prince, and they put those iron shoes on her, and she dies, you know, dancing.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to be doing that in this fairy tale, but you never know.
Did they ever do like a sequel to Snow White like they did with Bambi and, you know, Disney sometimes makes these sequels?
I can't remember. It seems like that, and maybe I'm confusing this with all the other Disney, you know, stuff that I have roaming around in my head, but it seemed like there was one with Snow's child.
Really?
But I cannot remember, or maybe I'm confusing it with another princess.
Snow White, the sequel. I'm Googling it right now.
They didn't call it Rose Red, did they? Because that's a whole different fairy tale.
Some reason, I have this whole weird picture in my head of a very doe-eyed, younger version of Snow White. And it might just be a doll that I've seen. Who knows?
I don't know.
16 years. Go ahead.
Oh, they brought out all the sequels with Cinderella and the stepsisters.
Yes.
That might be it, too.
That.
Yeah.
That's why I was like, well, could there be plot material here for Disney to do Snow White 2, The Demise of the Evil Queen?
We'll see.
No, but I've noticed that Evil Queen gets a lot of attention on like Twitter and Facebook, and that people love her. She's playing that role to the hilt.
Oh yes, absolutely. And now that we know that she's still the Evil Queen in the real world, that opens up a whole array of new possibilities story-wise. Because if she knows, is she the only one, or does Rumpelstiltskin still know something?
I am a firm believer that Mr. Gold knows.
I think so, too. I think the two of them. I still think that somehow Rumpelstiltskin is perhaps an even more important person than the Evil Queen. And he seems to be... Regina is always shown as being the person in control, and literally by crushing that heart, she shows that she has power over life and death. But Rumpelstiltskin, it seems to have even power over the Evil Queen. Remember that if he says please, then she has to do what he tells her to do. So we've got that whole chain of obedience in Once Upon a Time, where, you know, Graham has to be obedient to the Evil Queen, but the Evil Queen has a deal with Rumpelstiltskin, and so he is ultimately the true puppet master here. So,
just so you know, I'm finding references to a Snow White 2, Someday My Prince Will Come, that was released straight onto DVD back a long time ago.
But was it Disney?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. They have no shame.
And that's exactly where I found it, was somebody saying you desecrated a classic Disney movie, and, you know, shame on you for doing this. And it's kind of funny. So.
Oh my goodness.
Let's not remind them.
Yeah. And to be fair, I've never seen it, so I have no idea.
I don't know
what it's about.
I'm trying to find it on Google, but I can't.
It says Walt Disney Home Video presents Snow White 2. When Will My Prince Come? Coming to video April 1st. And this was, I'm trying to find a year for this one. It says it classic follows the adventure of Snow White's daughter as she searches for her prince. Oh, interesting.
So you were right.
And if you thought that the Evil Queen in the original classic fell to her death, think again. We'll see what...
Almost sounds like a joke to me. Like it's.
I know. I'm trying to figure out, because I don't see any reference to it.
Me neither. And I'm looking on YouTube for trailers, and I don't find it. So perhaps this was just an idea, and it never materialized because of the outrage.
Let me just do one more search and see what I can find. And maybe I'll go to work today and see what I can dig up in the library at work.
Yes, that would be great.
With a shovel.
With a shovel, exactly. Oh, yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, while she looks, Father, did you catch all the different references to the pet and the cage, the wolf? The queen says that there are two kinds of people, the wolves and the sheep.
Yes.
You know, those who kill and those who get killed.
Ah.
And at no time is the huntsman interested in being a pet. He calls the palace a cage. He doesn't want to be the official huntsman to the queen in return for doing this chore, job, favor for her. He wants a ban on the wolves so that they can't be killed. But even at the cemetery at the end, Regina treats him like a pet. She grabs him by the arm. She says, "Let's take you home."
Yeah.
And then she calls him, "You're my pet," when she pulls out his heart. So
it's tragic.
But I thought it was interesting that she takes the pet and takes it to her bedchamber.
Mm-hmm.
And that the affair that he has with her in the real world is not of his doing. It's not like he's chosen it. It seems to be some sort of a continuation.
Yes, he's still, I think, a prisoner of her. And she manipulates him. This is not about love at all. So that relationship is literally without a heart. And so it kind of explains the whole situation a little bit more. Because I remember the reveal that he had an affair with Regina. I was like, come on, you're kidding me. That is not realistic. Who could ever love an evil person like that? I mean, there's nothing in Regina that is likable. But
it makes sense now.
Now it makes sense. It totally makes sense.
But it's kind of, I mean, you can kind of see it in the real world, too. I mean, how many young people are out there that use physical intimacy without true feelings behind it? And it kind of traps them.
Yeah.
Prevents them from being able to move forward in real love.
Yes. And you have that kind of behavior. You see that behavior that we see with Graham a little bit, where, you know, after Regina, he kisses Emma, and it's almost as if he never really finds that true love or that heart, and so he keeps searching for it. And you see in the relational behavior of a lot of people nowadays, that same kind of like, you know, they go from one night stand to one night stand. A little bit what Emma is also talking about with Snow.
Right, like, Mary Margaret had that one night stand with Dr. Whale.
And she feels guilty. She feels guilty about it. Well, yes. And then I think it shocked also a lot of parents who might have been watching this with their kids. It's like, what? But in a way, you know, story-wise, I think it makes sense because it's Emma, too, doesn't really open up, really. So it's in a way, her romantic life mirrors her remember that when she meets Regina for the first, or in that cafe, Regina says, you know, there's a number 7 in your life because you never stay in one place at the same time. The same is true for her relationships. She never stays with someone for an extended period of time because her heart is not in it. It's not true love there. It's just, you know, searching for love, but looking for it in the wrong places. And I think that with intimacy, that's probably the same problem I think that a lot of people have is like, shouldn't these two be linked? Shouldn't intimacy always be linked with love? And yet, if it's not, then it can never fulfill you. So people keep searching and they go from partner to partner. That's just my 2 cents. Did you find anything about the Snow White sequel?
I did. I found something from 1990, but I can't say that it's a Disney one. It doesn't look Disney. Mm. It looks very cheap animated version of it, but okay. I haven't found anything of yet. But there's a lot, you know, the internet sometimes it's hard to, you know, weed through all this. And, but I will, you know, since I have access to a Disney library, I will go and see if
would be
it's
interesting.
Listed anyway.
It would be very interesting to know if they have ever had that project, because I don't think it exists right now, but there might be plans, or there might have been plans in the past.
That's so, right. And then, you know, when I make it to work today, I'll quickly go check out a book on Snow White and see what happens.
Very cool. Let's move to our next section here.
I wish, but nothing changes. I wish I was better at wishing.
And to our listeners, we always say, your wish is our command. And if you have something to add or to correct, please tell us on our website, onceuponatime.sqpn.com. And Deborah, you've been going over the comments on our last few episodes. So
yeah, there are so many comments. It's just, I don't even think I'll be able to get to all of them. But, oh, wow, there are a lot of people who were telling me I'm wrong about my theories, but that we'll get to that in a little bit. But but there's a lot of stuff that I'm like, it's amazing what our listeners are picking out of the episodes. For example, Dicarious, I think, is his handle here. I don't know who this is, but it says that I thought that Snow White was just hit in the stomach with a stick like Emma was hit. Like Emma hit him in the stomach, and this is talking about Graham with a nightstick at the end of the last episode.
Uh-huh.
Getting hit in the stomach by both generations. Nice. Okay, so that's I guess I missed that one. But all right, what else do we have in here? Oh, Gary from New York City. It says two more things. In the fairy tale land, Snow White is dressed in a white feather covered dress, which to me might relate to Emma's last name. And they were sitting around a round table. Pinocchio was carving a whale. So was that in this last episode? I guess
I missed that. We've got Dr. Will at least being mentioned here.
I know. And I'm kind of curious to see if he's actually going to be the whale Monstrous from Pinocchio. Yeah, but, you know, it's kind of weird since Monstrous really didn't have, you know, he was just an animal.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And animals seem to remain animals in the real world.
Yeah. Let's see what else we have here. And this goes back to Glenn wrote, "Hi, I've seen the show. I have a big question. What is Rumpelstiltskin burying?" And that's where we were all speculating on that. You guys think he's burying something. I think he's just out bargain
digging. No, I like that idea. And it totally makes sense. He is trying to dig up treasures for his store.
Exactly. You know, or artifacts. Because how could he have them in Storybrooke? They didn't exactly just come with him. So, it says, interestingly, Mr. R encourages the sheriff to consider the dreams as memories. So I wonder if Mr. R is partially good or he's just selfish and wants fairyland back. And if he wants fairyland back and knows exactly what's going on, why doesn't he not directly tell the sheriff that he is the huntsman? My guess is that he can't due to the deal he made with someone even more significant than he. So do you, that brings up a good question. Do you think, Mr. Gold knows who he is?
Yeah.
I don't think we have long to wait.
Yeah. I don't think so. I don't think he does actually. I think he's also under the spell.
Oh, you think so?
It kind of falls under spoilers and trailers, but.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll save that for a little bit.
We'll save that for the end of the show.
Okay. This is also Gary from NYC says, living here in the UK, I just found about the show from the site and watched all 7 episodes yesterday. And this was a couple days ago. Listening to the podcast, has anyone mentioned what was written on the door of Emma's Boston apartment? It looks like it might have been a way to break the spell.
Hmm.
And so now I'm going to go back to the pilot.
Is it, you mean Snow's apartment? There are texts on the wall.
Well, no, he's saying Emma's Boston apartment.
Oh.
So now we have to go back to the pilot and see what's written above that.
Oh, interesting.
Well, they're going to have a marathon tomorrow on ABC. I think it starts
at
3 p.m. Central, 4 Eastern.
That's
they're going to show all 7 episodes.
That's pretty cool.
Back to back.
This is very cool.
And you can also watch them all if you don't want to sit down and watch TV all day long. You can also watch them. All the episodes right now on the ABC website, if you are living in the United States, that is. But they have put up all the episodes. Normally, you can only watch the previous one, but they've put them all up there. And it's probably also to get people excited about the rest of the season, which I think is not really necessary because everybody is still so excited. And this show is still growing, and it's doing extremely well in the ratings, which, of course, we are extremely happy about.
Yeah.
We are approaching the end of our show already, and I'm actually sad to cut this short, but we'll probably also have a little bit more time. When is the next episode?
I want to say the 7th, right?
On January 8th.
8th.
Because it's my birthday. That's how I remember.
Oh, wow. Oh, congratulations in advance.
Oh, thank you.
So I don't know if we will have time to record another episode before that, or whether our next episode is going to be about this 8th episode of Once Upon a Time. But, I think this is where we enter spoiler territory.
Yes.
And I have here a YouTube clip of 30 seconds showing us the promo of episode 8. And let's hope it doesn't have a loud commercial in front of it. I think we're about to find out at least. I don't know what my computer is doing, but it's like refusing to play anything here. I think Flash must have crashed. So
I hate when that does that.
All the time. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you're watching that promo, they don't mention it out loud, but you'll see clips of Little Red Riding Hood in Fairbook, or in Storybook, her character.
Oh, cool.
So I think her story, Ruby's story, is coming up very, very quickly.
That would be great.
Her with the
there
boy.
We go. Upon a time.
Oh, she's dressed in red with a picture basket. Unfold.
That's not for you.
Graham picked me to be deputy.
Miss Swan, you're fired.
New spells will be cast.
I summon thee.
And enemies.
Are you really going up against me?
Will collide. A People's Choice nominee for Best Drama.
You gotta get out of here.
Can't move. You have to help me.
ABC's Once Upon a Time. Sundays at 8, 7 Central.
Wow. That looks like that looks like a very exciting episode with explosions in it. Amazing.
There's definitely some big fire scene, because what you don't hear is the visual, and that is that Emma and Regina are trapped in a house on a set of stairs, and
yes.
Emma has to make a decision whether or not to save Regina.
And of course, she will. She will.
Of course, because Emma's, good like that.
And it also shows Rumpelstiltskin summoning someone or something. What could that be?
And you notice he doesn't look like the magical elf imp that he, he's not all glittery and scaly.
No,
and
he looks young.
He looks like a normal person.
It's almost as if something happened to him as well.
Well, I do have a little spoiler if you want.
Okay,
me to say it.
Hey, sure. Go ahead.
The next episode is titled Desperate Souls, and it is Rumpelstiltskin's background story.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, nice.
And the quote I found is, he tries to track down the ultimate power source in order to help his son avert the horrors of a meaningless war.
Oh, he has a son.
Remember when he told King George, magic can do a lot? But yes. I never said anything about resurrection. I keep wondering if that's going to be
theme. Yeah. And he is always asking for the ultimate prize, which is, the firstborn of people. So it would explain that as well. He has suffered a loss as well.
Mm. He kills the fairy godmother for the wand, the ultimate power. So he's looking for power.
Power, but probably the ultimate power. He has a second agenda. He wants to probably resurrect his son or bring back someone from the dead. Or this opens up again a lot of new possibilities story wise.
And in the real world, it's going to be Emma running for sheriff.
Oh, nice! So it means that Graham, at least in Storybrooke, is still dead.
Yes.
Or at least gone. Perhaps he's in coma, but I think he's really dead. Oh boy, what an episode. Okay, we're in the final minutes of our show. Crazy theories. Predictions.
Well, I've always said that I thought Emma was Sleeping Beauty, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, people are saying, though, they've already mentioned Sleeping Beauty in episode 2, which I didn't watch very closely, I have to admit, so I might have missed that. But it's interesting that when Emma kisses people, they come back to life.
Yes.
Symbolically.
Well, she breaks the spell.
Yeah, she does.
And she's the only one who can, according to Henry.
According to Henry. Yeah, so I'm still, you know, I'm still kind of wondering about, you know, what's her connection and is she, you know, are we going to be seeing Snow White coming up in the future episodes or, you know, am I right?
We'll see. We'll probably learn that before the end of the first season. That's my little prediction. Let's see, Shelley, you've got 1 minute for your crazy prediction.
Oh, I'm still pondering the idea that who's going to have to make the ultimate sacrifice? Will it be Emma? And what will she have to sacrifice?
Yeah, that's true. And Emma still has an outstanding debt with Rumpelstiltskin, doesn't she?
Yes.
She struck a
deal.
But
she's already given him her firstborn.
In a way, yeah, she did.
Mr. Gold procured Henry for Regina.
But he wants more, because otherwise, yeah. You know. Okay. Interesting theories. I don't really have any, like, crazy predictions. I'm just so excited about the fact that we're soon going to see a new episode, because this period without new episodes has been long and frustrating. And I just am so curious to see, with this quality of storytelling already in the first 33% of the season, of season one, so where are they going to take this? And they must have an overarching plan for, you know, at least a couple of seasons. So, gosh, this series is going to be amazing, I think. Anyway, thanks. That's it for this episode. Thanks for listening. Go to sqpn.com to see how you can support our podcasting network. And we will see you soon for another episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.